This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new, now, and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, William Shatner blasts into space, and we tell you why.
Plus, Apple is yet another victim of the global computer chip shortage, and we tell you what it means for your next iPhone.
Also on the show, how Facebook is planning to nudge teens away from harmful content.
And how a drone just saved a life with a world-first lung delivery.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
This episode of The Feed is brought to you by Norton, one of the leading consumer cybersecurity brands. No one can prevent all cybercrime or identity theft, but when you want to help protect your devices, choose Norton 360, available at Staples.
Trending up.
Well, my friend, more people are going to space, but before we get to that, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing great. Can't complain. It's been a busy few days, and just can't believe we're kind of mid-October now. How did that even happen, Michael?
I know, it's absolutely insanity when you think about how fast things go, but also when they're happening, how slow they are, given that we're still kind of in a pandemic, but we're unsure. It's just such a weird time. But you did manage to have a wonderful Thanksgiving out east for Canadian Thanksgiving with your family in PEI. And so that was a blessing. And the photos looked amazing. If anyone hasn't seen Amber's Instagram, the sunsets in Prince Edward Island, it is just spectacular.
It's so pretty. You're exactly right. So because our little beach house is right on the water and faces west, we just get these beautiful sunsets. And I thought they were pretty in the summer, but apparently they're even better in the fall. So it's a real privilege that we got to go out there again and spend time with family. However, I will say, as everybody knows, PEI is starting to get cold in the next few weeks, so I probably won't be back till the spring or the summer. So that was kind of it for this year.
Well, I'm glad it was a really good time. And speaking of a good time, we're going to talk about space. What are people talking about? Mr. Shatner.
Well, this is exciting. As people probably saw or heard about, the 90-year-old actor, William Shatner, as Michael just said, he joined Blue Origin, which, of course, is the rocket founded by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, for a human space flight. And this would make William Shatner the oldest man to ever go into space. He's 90 years old. And, you know, they weren't gone for too long. But apparently, according to USA Today, William Shatner said that the experience was unlike anything that they described. And it appears that it was a trip of a lifetime for him.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy to think about it, regardless on whether you are into space or not. Just the sheer technological advances we've made, I think, is just extraordinary. And it is interesting because if you look at the account that Shatner gives, if you look at all of the media outlets and the reporting, it's quite remarkable that, you know, even just leading up to it, that anticipation and every time things are, you know, put on hold or and they can't go and then they can and you've got to do all these checks, it's just like that, how nervous it can make you. And, you know, you really aren't then in control because, you know, once you're strapped into something like that, I think there's no going back. There's no please can I get off. But it is quite remarkable. So, you know, and I can appreciate, you know, what they've been able to accomplish really for people and humanity and what it could mean for the future. And obviously I like space when it comes to all the things that they can do that they can't do on Earth, like certain experiments and bring that back and key learnings. And if more people are able to go safely, that could mean more things we could learn and do in space that could then help the planet. So those are the kinds of things that I get excited about. And this is just one step further to that.
Yeah, it's very cool. You know, just as you were talking, I started to laugh because you said, you know, you can't get off once you've jumped on the spacecraft. And it reminded me of my flight back from PEI. So my son, Connor, who's 12 years old, it's strange. He's just a bit of a nervous flyer, like I've been my entire life. And I've never talked to him about flying before, but he just is nervous. And so what I did with him, because I'm an over planner, is I told him, like, don't worry. Like, I've got us all in one row together. There's going to be no stress at the airport. We're in row 9. You can have the window seat because he likes to look out the window when he takes off and lands. So he feels safer and he knows where he is. I mean, it's a whole ordeal. So, you know, I've gotten everything ready. I've got snacks. I've got all this kind of stuff. Like, I'm like mom of the year. So anyway, we walk onto the plane in Charlottetown to fly back to Toronto, and we, you know, mosey down the aisle in economy class, row 9. I'm like, you know, getting ready for seats. So row 9 on WestJet, on one side of the plane, is the only row where they do not have a window seat.
So, oh no.
He tucks away into his seat, and all it is like the plane wall. He can't see anything, and he starts hyperventilating and having a total panic attack. It was so horrible. And I'm thinking to myself, of all of the hundreds of seats, you know, a couple hundred on that plane, of course, you know, me being the biggest planner ever, I put him in the one that has absolutely no window. Oh, it's terrible. So you can only plan so much in life. It's 2 hours.
Yeah. No, see. Oh, so, you know, you were so good up until then. And, you know, the best thing is that's all he's going to remember. He's like, mom, I know. Got me I know. A wall like, seat. You know, I looked at the wall for 2 hours. I was on my best behavior. I was excellent during Thanksgiving. I've been a great son. And my payment for my good behavior is being put in a corner looking at a wall for 2 hours, stuck in a tin
total
can.
Total claustrophobia. 30, feet above that. It was bad.
Go to Seat Guru. check beforehand. Well, you know, what's not great as well is poor Apple is also having a bit of a poor time. And so obviously we have talked on the show before about the computer chip shortage that's going on globally and affecting a lot of products. And of course, Apple is also experiencing a problem with this. And of course, as a result, they've said that their expectations of how many iPhone 13s they'll be able to sell or even create and make and produce is going to be obviously a lot lower. Due to the ongoing global computer chip shortage, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with and now is kind of realizing the extent and the impact that it's causing on items that we rely and depend on.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody should pay attention to that. Also, just quickly wanted to mention, because we've been covering Facebook and Instagram so regularly, that according to Mashable, Facebook has said that there will be an Instagram feature in the future that will nudge teens away from damaging content. So it will help to basically sway those younger users from seeing certain types of content. I have no idea what exactly that means and all of the details around that, but certainly we've seen Facebook under a lot of pressure over the past few weeks and months to be able to change their algorithms and enhance the experience for as many young people as possible to keep them safe.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. So the Facebook's vice president of global affairs, Nick Clegg, has been on was having an interview with Dana Bash from CNN, and obviously it's been a lot of his comments have now been put in a lot or covered in a lot of other publications as well. What I found most interesting is this feature is called Take a Break, where they're going to try and prompt teens to simply just take a break from using Instagram. I would love to know at what level and how and where is that point of where they think that too much negative content, or what is that point of what is too much negative content, and then when they steer them away, because I would just assume you would want to have no negative content that's impacting them. Like, but again, am I too black and white when it comes to that?
I think it's a good question, and we will continue to cover this story, I'm sure, over the weeks to come.
Well, stay with us. When we return, a Bloomberg reporter joins us to talk Squid Game success. That's right, the Netflix Squid Games.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
Well, there is no way you have been on social media recently and not heard about Netflix's Squid Game. Now, as the streaming service continues to reign supreme in global platform demand for digital originals, you know, the question is out there. Can it continue its winning streak? Well, for a look at where Netflix is investing its content dollars, Lucas Shaw is a reporter for Bloomberg and also the author of the Screen Time newsletter and is joining us now. Lucas, what is the craze? What is this craze? Squid Game, Squid Game, Squid Game. That is literally like the top of your latest newsletter. What is it all about?
You know, the show is about a group of indebted South Koreans who are approached by kind of a shadowy organization that invites them to participate in some contest where they should be able to, you know, make money to pay off their debts. They go and within the first little bit of being there, more than half of them are killed in the first competition. And so they all understandably lose their minds. They sort of vote to leave this competition and go back to their lives. But many of them then realize or decide or feel that sort of the pains of their day-to-day life are so bad that they're willing to risk their lives to win this prize, this kind of ball of money at the top. And after a relatively slow first couple of days over the past few weeks, it's been the most popular show in more than 90 countries in the world. It's the biggest hit Netflix has ever released, and frankly had a growth in audience and sustained its audience in a way that I don't think we've ever seen at the company.
Well, I have to say that I have not watched it, and not because I've been ignoring it. I'm actually too scared to watch it because I heard it's quite dark. So what do you think it is about this that is getting so many people's attention? Because this is pretty incredible, especially thinking about all of the big budget series and movies that, of course, have been accessible on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's always hard to know exactly why something becomes as popular as it does. It is pretty clear that its message about inequality and kind of haves and have-nots is resonating with people. And I think that's the through line through a lot of programs that have been popular over the past couple of years. And, you know, you can even trace it to another really well-regarded Korean movie, Parasite, which won the Oscar a couple of years ago, and similarly was a class parable. I also think it combines that message with a really simple to understand idea, one that people have flocked to before in something like Hunger Games. It's got really striking visuals, and it's just really well made. You know, it's created by a well-known Korean director who has made several successful movies in Korea. What's different this time around, of course, is that a Korean program is traveling everywhere.
Well, see, what resonated with me that's also in the top three most successful content pieces or offerings from Netflix of late is Sex Education. Now, it is brilliant. It is well acted. It has great cast. The messages, the things they deal with that are relatable to teens and high school. It's hilarious. Obviously, it deals with some very serious issues, so I should stress that. But what is it about Netflix's ability to get it right with international content? Because again, when you look at the offerings when it comes to streaming services, and there are quite a lot of them out there, you've got Hulu and Disney Plus and HBO Max, none of them compare to Netflix's ability to get it right with international content in certain regions, but also have that content resonate with audiences globally, no matter where they're from.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and I think it's one of the it's perhaps the most important thing that Netflix has done over the past few years. When you ask why is it that they've had so much success, I think part of the answer is that they've made the investment. You know, most American media companies focus on making shows for American audiences, or even when they're trying to tell stories now, especially in the movie business, for the world, they do so from a distinctly American perspective and have just found certain characters or stories that travel like Marvel. But what Netflix has done is, in addition, of course, to making shows for the US, they have established relationships with producers and writers and filmmakers all over the world, and certainly in important territories to them, like the UK, which is where Sex Education comes from, in Mexico, in Brazil, in Spain, in France, in India, in Korea, in Japan, and on down the line. And by giving those people and those producers space on its massive platform, it enables them to reach more people than they ever would have before. I don't know that people were opposed to watching programs from other countries before. They just weren't as exposed to it, right? And so the more you see something, the more comfortable you become with it. And this isn't specific to Netflix, keep in mind, because, you know, you look across media, you know, Spotify is allowing people to listen to music from anywhere in the world. YouTube is allowing people to watch videos from everywhere in the world. And most of these services, the majority of their customers don't live in English-speaking countries. And as a result, a lot of the material that's available for consumption is also not in English.
Yeah, it's a really good point. One last question I had for you, just because I know you're keeping an eye on all of the content across the streaming services. In your article, you say that Squid Game popped in late September, and I'm super curious, when we think about a show like this popping, where does it first become popular? Like, what is the pathway of how it gets into mainstream living rooms, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the immediate answer to that. Only Netflix has the data that would show, you know, it was first popular in this country or among this, you know, people who lived in these cities. But my sense of it is that it first started to really bubble up in Asian territories, you know, Korea, Southeast Asia. But it pretty quickly progressed to the US and other markets. And there does seem to be this sort of velocity with Netflix, where when something pops, it really pops and picks up steam kind of everywhere. We've seen it with all of the biggest hits, whether it's La Casa de Papel and Money Heist or Lupin, all these foreign shows. I just think Netflix is really good at using social media and people, because we're sort of overwhelmed with things to watch. When we all hear about something that is popular, it feels like everyone else is watching. We have this desire to join in.
Absolutely. It's that whole fear of missing out. Now, we want to encourage people to follow you on social media at @Lucas_Shaw. And of course, sign up for your newsletter, which is called Screen Time. Thanks so much for joining us today, Lucas.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Up next, how to bring all of Google's privacy settings under one roof.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. And first up, we have an app called Mental Happy, which is a safe and secure health platform where you can talk about day-to-day life challenges, emotional health, and receive support from others in terms of what you're experiencing. So this is an interesting app, Michael. And I will say that we're seeing a lot more apps in this space in terms of apps that are working hard to promote mental health and helping people to get through challenging times. And I just think, especially during the pandemic and so many months of isolation and loneliness, this is just going to be something that continues to be necessary in the future.
Yeah. And what I liked about this app was that it had this component of sharing stories and experiences, where in a lot of platforms that deal with mental health, I really see it's more of a transactional one-on-one, like me with a professional. Whereas here, I like this idea of inspirational members' stories and being able to see other people that have had similar experiences or something that you can relate to help you get through it and or see that there is actually light at the end of the tunnel. And so that's what resonated with me most of all with this, and how it differentiated from some of those other apps, because we have seen an explosion, actually, which is a fantastic thing, but an explosion of apps and online resources for mental health services, obviously, I think a lot to do with in response of the global pandemic that we've all experienced.
Yeah, it's very cool. And like you said, I think that this space is going to be so interesting over the months and years to come, just to see the evolution of some of these apps that are able to change lives. So really excited to see what takes place there. Next up, Michael, you found an app called Privacy Guard, and this is an app that will help you with all of your privacy settings across especially Google services, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, and I picked this one out just because I know that we do skew sometimes a little too much to the iOS platforms that doesn't often have an Android offering. And so I thought this was really useful for those people that have Android devices and obviously aren't very good at keeping across all their settings, which you all should be. And so this helps you do it all under one roof, so to speak, and make sure that you can see exactly what settings you have across all of the applications that you're using, and ensure that you're only letting the key necessary information that you do to be able to use the applications for their purpose. So because I do think a lot of people forget, you know, that you shouldn't be having everything open and you know, available.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think it's overwhelming. I mean, if you think about all the apps that people use on a regular basis and all of the social networks that you use, I mean, it is an incredible amount of different services. And this is one thing we'll talk about a little bit later, because we do have a tech tip coming up. And I will say that, you know, if you think about, Michael and I used to host a show together called App Central. If you think about that show, Michael, at that time, like maybe you had, half a dozen apps that you used regularly, or you tried some other apps out. Now, when I go on my phone, and I am very aware that I probably have more than most people, you know, I'm actually swiping like pages of apps. That's where we're at right now.
No, and that's you make such a good point, because I remember when we did start the show, there wasn't a lot of options out there, and so we would get some very crazy weird apps, and we couldn't go find better ones, so we would take sometimes the really weird ones, but now there's so much, and we just take for granted. You just have to be so careful, and so that's why I think this one is really good for those people, helping bring Google's personal settings under one roof, so that you do not have to mess around all the settings and go through, all of the different personalized settings as well. You can do it all in one application across the board, and just be really mindful and be, know exactly what you're sharing, where you're sharing it, and take some control and responsibility for your online activities.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? I think awareness.
That sounded very dad-like, didn't it? Sorry.
No. I think awareness is the first step, right? Is being able to just see that full picture in terms of what you're doing at any given point. Because we're all overwhelmed. We all have lots to do. And this leads nicely into this next app. It's a task manager app. To be honest with you, I've been looking for one of these for a while. And this is basically a to-do list and a task organizer. So the idea is that it will help you manage all of your tasks in one place so you can be more productive. It's called Fanya, and it actually has quite good reviews. I always like to look at the reviews. I'm looking at the Google Play Store right now, and it seems to me to be a very elegantly designed app. And I feel like that's important, you know, having reviewed so many apps, Michael, some of them are just clumsy looking. But this, I feel they've done a really good job, and I think the comments actually reflect that as well.
Yeah, and I thought this would be good and wanted to let you know about it, just because I know, and you've said this before, like sometimes apps that are more minimal are a lot easier to use and navigate. And I think that this one fits that bill. And so basically everything that you'll ever need in a task manager app is pretty much on the actual home screen itself. And then the other thing that I like about this is that there's a little touch of color-coded tabs. And I've always worked, ever since I used to do stuff on pen and paper, I would always do things in color-coded systems. So especially like asking questions for interviews and stuff, I would sub them into like different color-coded questions of levels of where we are at in an interview and stuff. So I'm pretty crazy like that. So I love this idea of color-coding my to-dos as well, and also like working out relevancy and importance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool. And again, I think we have more stuff than ever now that life is turning back to returning to normal somewhat. It's good to have an app like this in place.
Absolutely. So those three apps again: Mental Happy, Privacy Guard, and Fanya. So of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out and let other people know about, tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag #TheFeed. Coming up, the latest in smart home tech with Mark Saltzman.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. for everything new, now, and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Wishlist.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Many of us are spending more and more time at home, and now that the weather is getting cooler, I think we're all thinking about how to make our living space smarter. I know I am, and I love smart home tech. So joining us now to talk more about this is Mark Saltzman. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Amber and Michael. Thanks for having me on The Feed.
We are super excited, and I know you have six picks here. So let's get to the first two. We want to talk about technology for outside the home, for security and just really keeping the home safe.
Yeah, security and peace of mind for sure. So we'll start with the Eufy Cam. That's EUFY Cam 2C Pro. This is a two camera kit. They're a pair of wireless cameras with each has a 2K resolution. So very sharp visuals for both your front door and back door, perhaps. So you can see what's happening around your home. And you can have them serve sort of as a video doorbell as well, because that is two-way audio. So if you see a courier walk up to your front step, you're notified on your phone, for example, and you can have a chat with them and tell them, you know, leave the package by the little railing or what have you. They're IP67 weatherproof for the outdoors. There's color night vision. They're wireless. You don't have to wire them to your home, which is convenient. And the battery, the rechargeable battery, lasts up to a half a year on a single charge, which is great. And then finally, unlike other cameras like the Ring Video Doorbell or the Google Nest family, there is no charge to see your videos. You don't have to subscribe to a service like Ring Protect or Nest Aware or anything like that to go back in time and see your footage. So it's $379 for the pair. Again, it's called Eufy Cam, EUFY, and it's a two camera kit. And then staying with the outdoors, yeah, a Wi-Fi deadbolt is a great idea for convenience sake and security. And Schlage has their Encode smart Wi-Fi deadbolt. So there's four ways to get into your home. You can use the keypad. And you can program, by the way, up to 100 different codes. And everybody in the family can have their own, of course. You can use a mechanical key if you want, a standard key. There's an app on your phone that you can, like, for example, you're in your car, you pull into the driveway, you've got some groceries, so you don't want to fumble for a key. You can open the door with an app. Or if you're inside and you see maybe your child run up the steps to the front door, you can use your voice with a smart speaker, like an Amazon or a Google smart speaker, to unlock the door. So there's different ways to do it. So I like the versatility there. You can send virtual keys to friends and family or contractors, babysitters, a unique code just for them to enter your home. And again, giving you that peace of mind. It's $349 for the Schlage Encode smart Wi-Fi deadbolt. And I just like saying Schlage. It's just fun.
Well, I like the fact that you can see people coming and see what kind of state they're in, because I am a neat freak and I want to know how dirty or clean people are before they enter my home. But if I was too slow to see, how could I make sure that my home stays smart and clean? Because Amber's been to my apartment. I get very nervous when people start to make themselves feel at home.
Well, he also had a very big flood, Mark, just so you know.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about the flood in a moment. But before that, let's stay on the theme of staying clean. And that is a very top of mind for many these days, not just Michael. One of them, and the product, Amber, I know you're familiar with, is the Tinco Floor One S5. This is a wet and dry cleaner in one. So it mops and vacuums simultaneously. So it cuts your cleaning time in half, which I really like, and who couldn't use that? And it is more ideal for hard or sealed surfaces, by the way, opposed to, say, carpet or tile thing. A tile it does work on for sure. But it has this little iLoop sensor that automatically adjusts the water flow and suction and speed based on your mess, which is handy. And you know your floors are clean when the Ring goes from red to blue. It's right on the top where you're holding the handle. And there's an app as well. So the Tinco app on your smartphone will show you real-time updates, things like the battery level and cleaning reports and stuff like that. So it's $599 for the Tinco Floor One S. And for Michael, your guests who you want them to wash their hands, if you are a bit of a germaphobe, germaphobe rather, and no judging here. The Moen Sia bathroom faucet is going hands-free in early 2022. So it's called Motion Sense Wave. It's a touchless or hands-free sensor, just like you would find at a restaurant or maybe a hotel or airport public bathroom, but now in your own bathroom. So to start the flow of water, you just wave your hand in front of the faucet and you can wash your hands. If you do want to adjust the temperature, then you would of course touch the handle, but otherwise no need. And it reduces the spread of germs. It's very, again, top of mind for many homeowners during a pandemic. There's four different finishes, and it is coming in early 22 from Moen called Sia, which is C-I-A.
Very cool. Okay, so we have one more item. Before we get to that, I have to say, if you just heard a yelp, that was my dog. He was having a nightmare. You might not have heard it, but I moved him. So I think we are good now.
Hope he's okay.
He probably watched Squid Game. That's what happened.
Oh my gosh.
That's a very good point. So I had mentioned that Michael had a flood, and I know you have two items to wrap us up with that are great for cottages or cabins and even homes too.
Yeah. So for floods, this is the MyDLink Whole Home Smart Wi-Fi Water Leak Sensor. Bit of a mouthful, but you get a starter. In the starter kit, you get two different sensors. One plugs into the wall. One is battery powered, but you put it in vulnerable areas of your home, maybe by a sub pump or a washing machine. Maybe you have a cracked window in the basement. And no matter where you are on the planet, you're notified immediately if there's any water detected. So you can minimize the damage by having a neighbor or a contractor go over and take a look at it. If you are at home, there's also a 100 decibel siren that emits, a flashing LED strobe light. And if you have a Google smart speaker, it will announce that there might be a water issue with one of those sensors. So that's very convenient. No subscription needed. It uses just Wi-Fi. So it's also ideal for, you know, rental properties or maybe snowbirds. It's the MyDLink Whole Home Wi-Fi Smart Water Leak Sensor Kit for $79 for two of them. And you can add more, by the way, up to 16. And then finally, for cottages, homes, and even small businesses, the SureCall Fusion Professional is a top-of-the-line signal booster. It will significantly enhance the cellular signal of your phone. It doesn't matter what brand of phone you like or who your carrier is, who your mobile provider is. It works in larger homes and businesses up to 8,000 square feet. So you don't have those embarrassing dropped calls or missed calls. It also enhances text data. It also works with those little hotspots that you may rent or buy from your provider. And it supports up to 5G connectivity. It's $799. For the SureCall Fusion Professional. But if you have a smaller property, you can go with a less expensive SureCall model as well. But all good ideas, I think, for, as you said, homes and cottages too.
It's very cool. And there's so much cool smart home tech out there. And this is a great list to get people started. And of course, you should follow Mark across social media. You can check him out on Twitter at Mark_Saltzman. Mark, thanks so much for being here with your smart home roundup. And I know you have some holiday segments that you're going to be doing for us. So we're super excited for that as well.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. And it would be a pleasure to come back and chat with you and Michael again. Thanks for having me.
Up next, everything you need to know about the future of urban mobility.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Los Angeles is getting ahead of technology advances in transport with the Urban Movement Labs. Now, it's aimed at shaping the future of mobility in the city, and it's currently focused on preparing for air taxis to take flight. To share all of this new exciting world of transportation that we can look forward to, Sam Morrissey is the executive director of Urban Movement Labs. Sam, let's start with Urban Movement Labs itself and the mission. Obviously, air taxis isn't the only thing you guys are focusing on, but where do you start? Because obviously there's so many different areas to cover from policy to infrastructure and beyond.
Correct. Urban Movement Labs is a non-for-profit entity here in Los Angeles. We were actually founded by the mayor of Los Angeles, Mayor Eric Garcetti, in 2019, because the mayor realized that the job of looking forward to what's next in terms of transportation and mobility technology is a big job. It's bigger than one city department can take on, and it really requires a dedicated team. So the mayor founded our group in 2019, and in 2020, we made the wise decision to spin off and become a nonprofit organization completely separate from the city. but we really are that forward-thinking element. There's really enough challenges today in Los Angeles in terms of transportation and mobility that the various city departments that work in those areas really are busy focusing on those day-to-day efforts and don't really have the time to think about new policies and new regulations for new transportation technologies that may be coming down the road. So we focus on anything that moves, whether it's on the ground or in the air or manages those systems. We provide guidance to the city of Los Angeles and hopefully other cities as we grow and develop.
One thing I wanted to hear you talk about a little bit, for those of us who have been to Los Angeles, we understand the issues you have in terms of traffic congestion. Could you talk a little bit about the problem that the city of Los Angeles has and how you do need innovative and creative solutions like this?
Yeah, we're certainly not the only city with traffic, but we are very well known for traffic congestion. Mobility and traffic congestion is sort of in our DNA here in Los Angeles. We've been sometimes called the car capital of the United States, and we are really a sprawling metropolis. There's many different centers. There's no real distinct single downtown. There's many different areas throughout the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, and the greater Southern California region. And really, we have almost 20 million people that live in this Southern California region. We have the busiest ports and shipping complexes in the United States. We support more than 40% of the goods throughout the United States. And so there's just a lot of activity and a lot of movement and a lot of disparate distances between where people live and where people work or where people go to school, not to mention all the tourism draws. So there's a number of facets and challenges with moving around, and really just the kind of standard automobile is not the best way to get around. We have a really great and diverse public transportation system. We have a fantastic bus network, subways, and light rail, but there's always new innovations. And I think it all started back in 2013 or so when Uber and Lyft first arrived on the scene. They really shook up the world of taxi cab regulations and how cities managed for higher transportation and mobility. And after that came the electric scooters that were sort of dumped on various cities. And all of these challenges really showed the city that to think forward, to think ahead of it, you need to be proactive and not reactive. And so that's really what we try and do.
So speaking of being proactive, what are some of those specific lessons you've learned from where we are today and where we've come from with regards to transportation that you are then taking into account when we start to look at going into the air and into, you know, low flight offerings? And what does that look like? Because obviously, you know, a lot of people will then start to say, well, won't we then just congest another or a different space now as opposed to, you know, the land surface?
You know, that's a fantastic point. A lot of people in the transportation world speak of roadways as sort of a public utility that is not regulated the same way that we regulate, let's say, water or electrical distribution. Both water and electricity as a public utility is something that everyone has to pay for. Now, if you are at a certain income level where it's too expensive to pay for heating and water, there are many different policies and programs that the different utility providers provide to allow people of limited incomes to still get the water and electrical power that they need to survive. We've never really done that in the United States with roadways. It's been sort of a free utility that everybody can use whenever they want to use it and use how much of it that they want to use. And I think you see that in terms of congestion. You've seen some cities here in Los Angeles, we've definitely experimented with it, but in terms of charging different prices, variable price tolling, or sometimes called congestion pricing. In 2008 and 2009, we implemented variable price tolling on two of our freeways, where the cost to use those toll facilities increases as the congestion on that roadway increases. So you're paying more to get the benefit of a facility that is going to have less traffic on it and move at a higher speed, which is what motorists on those freeways are looking for. So when it comes to aerial mobility, I think looking at it through that lens, first and foremost, is very crucial. Understanding that there is a demand, there clearly is a market for people that want to move across Los Angeles in a quicker fashion than it currently takes in a car. But we need to make sure that we're pricing that in the right way, that it reflects the benefits as well as the impacts that it creates. And, you know, not to mention the concerns about safety and congestion and really just nuisance. Here in Los Angeles, we have helicopters flying over the city almost on a daily basis, whether it's a police helicopter or a news helicopter or a traffic helicopter over the freeways. And those helicopters are loud and noisy, and people already complain about the noise from those helicopters. We have a number of airports, not to mention Los Angeles International Airport, as well as some smaller general purpose airports that are located sort of near neighborhoods, and there's noise and pollution issues associated with those. So when we think about the future of aerial mobility, we kind of look at it through all those different lenses. And really, we're starting with a community-focused engagement-first policy. We're really talking to the people in the communities to find out what are those things that you're most concerned about when it comes to aerial mobility? What are those things that maybe you don't understand and want to learn more about? And we're really helping to make sure that any of the policies that we ultimately develop really address those community concerns and the concerns of the people that live and work here in Los Angeles.
We just have about a minute left, and I have one quick question for you. Do you have urban mobility envy of any cities around the world? Because I'm curious if anyone's been able to figure this out.
I mean, I love traveling to international cities, Germany, Paris, France, and London, as well as some Asian cities. They do fantastic jobs with wayfinding and connectivity. I think that's the toughest thing in Los Angeles is that we actually have a number of different operators for our rail and bus lines. And it's just very confusing. It took me about a year just to understand how to get around Los Angeles. And I envy those cities where it's almost intuitive.
Well, listen, Sam, we so appreciate you taking the time to join us, and hopefully you'll come back on the show and talk a little bit more about the progress that has been made and new innovations on the horizon. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. We tell you how a drone saved a life.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, but before we get to our topic of the day, here is a cybersecurity tip that's powered by Norton. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so let's talk about getting cyber smart with good cyber hygiene. What exactly is cyber hygiene? Well, you can think about it as a cybersecurity version of washing your hands well with soap for 20 seconds after you come home from a trip to the store. We're probably all used to that these days. Now, cyber hygiene is a set of basic habits that can help to keep you and your family's devices protected from identity theft, scams, and other online dangers. Here are some examples of practicing good cyber hygiene. They include using strong passwords, setting up multi-factor authentication on your accounts, and regularly updating software on your devices. When it comes to strong passwords, I use a passphrase that is unique to me, and this is a sentence that should be at least 12 characters long. Along with a passphrase, I also use two-factor authentication. That's basically a second layer of protection. So for example, I can get a text message to verify that I have logged into a certain site. It really just adds an extra step between inputting your password and accessing your account. Now, speaking of protection, no one can prevent all cybercrime or identity theft, but Norton 360 is what I trust to help protect my devices and my family's devices against cyber threats. For more information, you can visit Staples in-store or online. Okay, Aaron and Michael, we are going to talk about this new story that I just saw this week. And I was so excited by this because in the early days of the Feed on SiriusXM, we talked a lot about drones. And it's been a while since we've had any practical application of how drones are being used. And this was fascinating. So according to this article on CBC, it was also mentioned in other places, an unmanned drone actually made a practice flight over Toronto in the photo. And they also mentioned a world first that took place. This was an amazing accomplishment. So basically, they completed the world's first lung transplant delivery by an unmanned drone. So this is incredible. It took place between Toronto General Hospital, and it traveled to Toronto Western Hospital on September 25th. So, Aaron, I don't know if you've had a chance to check out the story, but pretty incredible.
Yeah, I checked it out. This is amazing. I'm glad that drones are being used for something helpful for, you know, carrying transplant organs. I know there are other helpful uses, maybe just less priority, less important. Like we've talked about drones delivering your food that you order from a delivery app, or drones delivering pizza or sushi. It's all well and good, but I'm happy to see that's being used for a practical reason, for a life-saving reason, a beneficial reason. And I know we were just talking about traffic and traffic issues in Los Angeles and the greater Los Angeles area. Don't get me wrong, there's no way you can get from one hospital to the other in Toronto, from Toronto Western to Toronto General or vice versa, in 6 minutes unless you had a drone. Trust me, biking would not do it, driving would not do it, a crazy taxi would not do it. So I'm glad to see drones used for something that could be more useful in the future and beneficial.
I think it's really interesting to see that it's done in a congested city environment. And I think that is also something that needs to be emphasized, just because obviously when we saw drones deployed for helping search and rescue outdoors, that kind of makes sense. And we've kind of seen that, you know, especially when people are lost in the woods, you know, or search and rescue teams can't get into certain areas that's too dangerous for whatever reason. This is interesting because it's carrying vital organs, and to see the success of that, because obviously that's a whole nother risk as opposed to just simply capturing footage. And we have seen in some third world countries where there's no infrastructure, no roads, there's hazards in the way. They've used drones to transport much needed medical supplies. So, and I can understand that would be a little bit easier in some circumstances, because there's not as many hazards in the sky with buildings and frequencies and all this kind of stuff. So this is quite fascinating to see the success of this in a major downtown city, like you said.
It's so cool. And it's amazing to know that they had been practicing this for a while, as I mentioned off the top of the segment, doing some practice flights. But then, you know, very soon after, used it in a real scenario. So it's just, I think, pretty awesome to see. Again, if you're wondering who did this, it was the University Health Network and Unither Bioelectronique, which is a Quebec-based bioengineering company. And what's fascinating is that, according to CBC, the journey only lasted 6 minutes. It was done at 1 a.m., obviously, you know, sort of a later time at night. And apparently, the individual who received the transplant is doing well. So I think it's just, it's really inspiring to hear how technology can really change the healthcare space. And if I had to pick one industry where I think it's the most exciting in terms of the impact of technology and emerging tech like this, that would be the space that I would say is so worth exploring. Aaron, you know, when you look at this, do you see this as something that has other applications in healthcare? I mean, just in terms of, you know, whether it's moving organs around or you know, I think now we in Toronto, we always see the emergency helicopters moving people around. You know, eventually maybe that's an unmanned aircraft. I could see that scenario. How do you see this really evolving?
It's hard to tell. Other than organs, which seem to be a success, I'm not sure, unless there's a specific medical device or a tool that needs to be that is not at one hospital, needs to be delivered from one to the next. Maybe this can help out, put it in a container and deliver the tools from one to the next. But I'm glad. I just hope it doesn't turn into easier delivery and more crowded skies of delivering pizza, and that it more stays more for legitimate, you know, healthcare and emergency purposes.
I think the only thing that I'm concerned about, obviously, is the security factor. And what I mean by that is it being fastened or anything going wrong, because obviously weather and hazards, as I mentioned, especially in built-up areas. And of course, when it comes to organs, time is exceptionally important and key. And so those things, I find it's just that risk factor. It adds a different risk element into it, just because obviously it's an early technology that doesn't have as much testing out there. And obviously, if you get this wrong, that person could end up dying, just because they then go back on the transplant list and how it works, and then waiting for another match and things like that. I think it's great, but obviously I also am aware, and I'm sure every medical professional is too, it's like aware of the risks as well.
Yeah, I mean, there absolutely would be risks. And you can only imagine that there was a contingency plan, you know, in terms of the flight path that they took and, you know, the actual structure or the drone that the lungs were in. I'm guessing it was pretty durable. That would be another thing to make sure that they considered. But it just is, again, I think it's promising because, you know, maybe we don't need that right now here in Toronto, because even though it's congested, it's easy enough to sort of get around. But just imagine this scenario in places that were really remote in terms of flying in different necessary medical equipment or even medicine and those types of things. I think that's where it gets pretty interesting. Let us know what you think. That is it for the show today. You can find us on social media at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80. And please, when you're chatting with us, use the hashtag TheFeed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks Channel 167.